I wanted to be close to you guys tonight. Well, I want to start off by making an apology for something. I went to Indiana this weekend for a study at a mentor of mine, Gary Fisher's house, and I got to learn a lot, and I love going there because, A, I learn a lot from the Bible studies, but also I love getting connections and meeting other young folks like me and talking to older preachers. And I was talking to one older preacher, and he grabbed me, and he said, "You're preaching, right?" I said, "Yes, sir," and we kind of talked about that. And he said, "Let me tell you something." He said, "If you can't say it in 15 minutes, it's not worth saying." So, and this is one thing, I looked at some of the times on my sermons recently, and I realized I've been hitting like 38 minutes, and I think my record was 42 so far. So I wanted to apologize about that. I'm still 20. I'm learning this. I'm working on my time, so just bear with me as I do that. And so tonight's sermon, I tried to make it as I didn't try to cut out anything, but also tried to make it very concise. So there's just three main points. But also why I wanted to be so close to you tonight is because tonight's topic, it's not a very comfortable topic to talk about. And it's a very emotional topic. And it involves death. Now, when it comes to death, the odds are not in our favor. Statistics show that one out of one humans die. So it doesn't look really good for us. But, you know, some people may say, "Oh, you're 20, why are you talking about death?" And my reply would be, "Well, until you've died, you go ahead and talk about it." You know, so death is something that is inevitable for all of us. But tonight's not just about death. Tonight's sermon is entitled, "When Death Seems Better Than Life." When death seems better than life. And if you look around, we see a lot of suicides in the news. You know, we've seen pretty recently, like Lil Peep, Robin Williams. There were a few more that I just went blank on. Chester Bennington, Chris Cornell. We see a lot of folks just taking their own lives into their own hands. And it's tragic. And we can talk all day about this and that, about why that's happening so often nowadays. We can talk about whether it's society's fault, whether it's parents' fault, whether it's school fault, government fault. I think a lot of it has to do with attitudes. Nihilism seems to be a very popular philosophy nowadays. I talked to Sid Latham about that a little bit yesterday. And why I really thought to do this sermon was I saw some music videos hit recently that kind of went viral, and a lot of it was talking about, there was one artist in particular who conveyed that he was bitter at God for all these people that have passed away. But then at the end, he says he realized this is the devil's work. And I really thought that was interesting. And someone yesterday at the study, and that's also why there's not a PowerPoint, was this was a very, something that just hit me while I was in Indiana. I was talking to a younger guy, and he kind of talked about, you know, struggles facing our age and older, and he said that it was something that he wished was talked about more. And so I got home pretty late last night, so I didn't get much time to work on this, so I spent the majority of this afternoon working on this and working with Gist. But we would be amiss if we thought that we as Christians were immune to this. I've been on way too many phone calls with young people around my age ready to take their own life who are Christians. And if you've ever had to go through that, that's not an easy thing to do. And I think we should be educated on this. And I am not a mental health expert. Take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm not saying be a therapist for them, but we'll get into that more. But what I want us to realize tonight is this is not an uncommon thing in God's people. We're going to look at multiple scriptures that show God's servants who struggled with wanting to die rather than live. So let's look at the first one in Jonah chapter 4. Now, we all know Jonah. Jonah was a prophet of God. We know he was sent to Nineveh, and was he too happy about going to Nineveh? He didn't want to do it. He thought that they did not deserve God's love, which, of course, we just talked about that fairly recently, so I'm not going to re-preach that sermon. But a few verses I want us to notice are in Jonah chapter 4 and verse 3. Jonah says, "Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live." And the Lord said, "Do you do well to be angry?" And then let's drop down to verse 8. It says, "When the sun rose, God appointed a scorching east wind, and the sun beat down on the head of Jonah so that he was faint. And he asked that he might die and said, 'It is better for me to die than to live.' But God said to Jonah, 'Do you do well to be angry for the plant?' And he said, 'Yes, I do well to be angry, angry enough to die.'" Now, what I think the root of Jonah's willingness to die was he felt like things were unfair. He felt like these people didn't deserve God's love. This isn't fair. This isn't going how I wanted. And I know a lot of folks that have been very down because they've seen some injustice in their eyes or some things that they don't understand on this earth, and they become bitter about it. And a lot of them become bitter unto death. And turn to Psalm chapter 73. This doesn't deal with dying, but it gets to the root of this bitterness, really. Psalm chapter 73, it says in verse 1, "Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For they have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. They are not in trouble as others are. They are not stricken like the rest of mankind. Therefore, pride is their necklace. Violence covers them as a garment. Their eyes swell out through their fatness. Their hearts overflow with follies. They scoff and speak with malice. Loftily, they threaten oppression. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongue struts through the earth. Therefore, his people turn back to them and find no fault in them. And they say, 'How can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are wicked, always at ease. They increase in riches. All in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all the day long I have been stricken and rebuked every morning. If I had said, 'I will speak thus,' I would have betrayed the generation of your children. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task." So we see that the psalmist experienced these similar emotions. He was wondering, "God, I serve you. I do my best to please you. And I see all this wickedness around me. I see people mocking you. I see people blaspheming. I see people oppressing people. And they don't have a care in the world. They're living long lives. They're fat." He says their eyes swell through their fatness. They were rich. They had an abundance of everything. And the psalmist says, "Why? I don't understand this." And I think it's interesting in verse 1, he says, "My foot," or verse 2, it says, "My foot had almost slipped." Because it's a slippery slope. When we get into that mindset of seeking complete fairness and justice in the earth, it's a slippery slope. And for some folks, it can be, like I said, it can become a bitterness and it can become a task and it can weigh on them so much that they're willing to take their own life because they just don't see the point. They don't get it. They don't, why am I having such a hard life when I'm trying to do the right thing and then other people aren't doing the right thing, and they have awesome lives. And some people can relate to that today. Let's pick back up, in verse 17. It says, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then I discerned their end. Truly you set them in slippery places. You make them fall to ruin. How they are destroyed in a moment, swept away utterly by terrors. Like a dream when one awakes, O Lord, you rouse yourself, you despise them as phantoms. When my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant, I was like a beast towards you." When we let our bitterness consume us, we become a beast. We become ignorant and we become angry. And you see, the ultimate example I can think of this is Jesus. Because Jesus, what the key was, he bore his own cross. But you know what that entails? Letting go of the bitterness. See, Jesus could have been bitter. Jesus, if anyone, had a right to be bitter because he had no sin. And he definitely had not done anything to deserve it. But he let that bitterness go and he picked up his cross. And Andrew talked about this a lot recently. What are we supposed to do? pick up our cross, the whole idea of discipleship. Now let's look at the second reason. I've listed this, and this can mean your own thing. This isn't definitive. These aren't the only reasons that a person may feel this way. There's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of reasons why people can feel this way. So don't take this as an all-inclusive list. But the second one I have is overwhelming dread or hopelessness of a situation or even of life. Turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 26. And I think this is something we don't realize, but Jesus felt this same emotion. In Matthew 26 and in verse 38, we know that Jesus' death is coming soon, and it had been revealed to him all the things that he was going to suffer. And it says, then Jesus went with him to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I go over there and pray. And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, my soul is very, very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me. Did you catch that? Jesus said he was sorrowful unto death. What I take that to mean is he was so upset, he was in so much dread and so much anxiety that it would have been easier to just be dead than in there. And that can be caused by a plethora of situation. I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't. I'm the preacher, but I can't read minds. You all have your own lives outside of here. I don't know what you're going through. But some of those things in your life may cause you to feel this way. You may feel hopeless in a situation that you have no control over. Now let's look at another one. Turn to 1 Kings 19. We talked a little bit about Elijah and the adult Bible class. Now, if you remember, Elijah had confronted Ahab, and he had called a contest between the gods. And the God of Israel. And what they did is they set up sacrifices. They said, whoever's God answers with fire, that's the true God. So do you remember what the false prophets of Baal did? They were out there all day screaming and cutting themselves until the blood was rushing out of them. And they had called for hours and hours, and Elijah had kind of mocked them. And then what Elijah did was he doused his entire altar in water. And then do you remember what happened? He prayed to God, and what did God do? He sent fire and answered. And then the people of Israel, it looked like their hearts were turned. They proclaimed that the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. And then this is one part that's kind of left out, but you know what they did next? They went and they slaughtered the prophets of Baal. They went, they gathered them all up, and they killed them all. They purged the evil out of Israel. It was a wonderful spiritual victory. Can you imagine that it's you versus basically all of Israel, and then now everyone's on your side? And then the evil was purged. It was a great victory. But then Jezebel sends a messenger to Elijah, and she say, may the gods do so to me and more also if your life does not become like one of those prophets of Baal by this time tomorrow. So let's pick up in 1 Kings 19 and verse 4. It says, but he, that being Elijah, himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, it is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my father's. And he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said to him, arise and eat. You see, he had come off this great spiritual victory, this great spiritual high. But what happened? It crashed and burned. He was so worried about the situation. I don't know if he was just scared for his own life, or maybe he just felt defeated, that how can this great victory be brought down to such a humbling loss. I think he felt completely hopeless in this situation. And I think it's really touching to me, because he says it's enough. Because we know Elijah had been doing a lot. He had done a lot of miracles. He had fought a long time. He had been fighting and fighting and fighting, and he was tired. mentally and physically exhausted because he says, it's enough. I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. God, just take my life. And what does it say he did next? It says he laid down and slept. You know, some people, I don't know if you've ever dealt with that before, but you just want to go to sleep. You just want that rest. But read with me in verse 9. Let's drop down. Verse 14, he said, I have been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, I don't know how to say that, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. So you see, God had a plan for Elijah anyway. God didn't grant him this request. But do you think that changed his emotions? I think it might have been somewhat encouraging, but I think he was still tired. And one thing, I'm not going to get into this too much, but one thing that I think is interesting is when he felt this way, God gave him a task. And if you're struggling with these thoughts, and if you're struggling with these things, I would tell you to do the same thing. Get some tasks. Make some things for yourself to do. I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's a psychologist from Canada, and he's kind of blown up because he's a little bit politically incorrect, but he wrote a book called 12 Rules for Life. And he talked about how everyone has the desire to fix the world, you know, change the world, make the world a better place. And he said that starts in your bedroom. He said, make your bed every morning. He said, because if you can't take care of yourself, he said, I'm not kidding. Make your bed every morning. That helps. I've told that to a lot of people, and that has helped them a lot. It sounds silly, but when you focus, when you have a little task like that, and then when you start with a small task and then you work it up, you don't start by, oh, I'm going to get my PhD in science. That's my task. Start off small and then work up big. Well, let's look at maybe the final reason that I've listed tonight, and that is physical or mental ailments that you're dealing with. Turn with me to Job chapter 3. I'm sure we're all familiar with the sufferings of Job and all the horrible things that he really had to go through. He lost his kids, his wealth, and eventually his health as well. So he was attacked from all ends. He really did lose everything. And I think Job's wife kind of gets a bad rap. When she said, curse God and die, I think that's because she saw how much pain he was in and how much suffering he was going through. And when she's saying that, she knows that once he curses God, she believes he'll die. So she said, just do it. Just get this over with. You're in pure misery. And in chapter 3, in verse 1, it says, after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, let the day perish on which I was born. And the night that said a man is conceived, let that day be darkness. May God above not seek it, nor light shine upon it. Let gloom and deep darkness claim it. Let clouds dwell upon it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. That night let thick seize it. Let it not rejoice among the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Behold, let that night be barren. Let no joyful cry enter it. Let those curse it who curse the day, who are ready to rouse up Leviathan. Let the stars of its dawn be dark. Let it hope for light but have none, nor see eyelids of the morning, because it did not shut the doors of my mother's womb, nor hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not die at birth, come out of the womb and expire? Why did the knees receive me, or why the breast that I should nurse? For then I would have lain down and been quiet. I would have slept, then I would have been at rest. He was in so much pain, I would argue mentally and physically, that he wished he had never been born. And I think we can all, it'd be awesome if not all of us, but I think most of us can relate to that feeling of, I'd be able to rest. I'd be able to be quiet. I could sleep. I wouldn't have to deal with all this pain. I wouldn't have to carry this around. It'd just be gone, and I could sleep. And that's what Job wanted. And then Jeremiah, turn in your Bibles to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 20. See, Jeremiah had just suffered imprisonment, and he had been mocked almost his entire prophetic career. And in chapter 20, again, there's another instance of when he was imprisoned. And in verse 7, it says, O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. You are stronger than I, and you have prevailed. I have become a laughingstock all the day. Everyone mocks me. Drop down to verse 14. He says, Cursed be the day on which I was born, the day when my mother bore me. Let it not be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought the news to my father. A son is born to you, making him very glad. Let that man be like the cities that the Lord overthrew without pity. Let him hear a cry in the morning and an alarm at noon, because he did not kill me in the womb. So my mother would have been my grave, and her womb forever great. Why did I come out from the womb to see toil and sorrow and spend my days in shame? See, maybe you've been persecuted. Maybe you've been bullied your entire life, or maybe you've suffered at the hands of someone else. Maybe people have done horrible things to you. You may relate to that feeling. And what I want to get across is, if you felt this way, you're normal. There's nothing wrong with you. God's people have experienced this since the dawn of time. And you know, I don't have the time, but we could go into like guilt with Judas or so many other examples of, there are some examples of folks who did take their own life, like Ahithophel. Whenever things didn't go his way when he gave counsel, he went and he hung himself. So we could go on and on about this, but I don't want to do that. I want to keep this short. So what's the lessons for us? Like I said, I want you to realize, if you've experienced this, congratulations, you're human. And I want you to think about it this way. These people that felt this way, that would rather die than live, those people had directly spoken to God. They had seen miracles. They had performed mighty works. They've seen what God is capable of, and yet they still felt that way. So before you turn it and you think there's something wrong with you or you feel badly about yourself for feeling those emotions, don't. God's people have felt this for a long time. Second, I want you to find comfort in your spiritual and physical family. Now, I'm not saying, well, I will say, do get actual help too. Get help from professionals. I'm not a professional, but do that, first of all, because, and if you feel weird about that, that's utterly ridiculous. If, you know, if you broke your arm, you wouldn't hesitate to go into the doctor and say, oh, you just need to have more faith. When we have that attitude, we're just like those faith healers, you know. So seek professional help, but also find comfort in your family. And I want to call your minds back to 1 Kings 19, what we read. Remember what God said, because Elijah said, I alone am left. He felt alone, and a lot of times we feel alone when we're feeling this way too. But God says, I've left 7,000 who are like you. They've not kissed Baal. They haven't kneeled down and worshipped him. So my plea to you, what I would beg you to do, is find those 7,000. Find those, again, not a literal 7,000, but find those people in the church that you can rely on, that you can talk to. And by the way, if someone expresses those feelings to you, don't immediately go off to, oh, that's selfish, this and that, you're just being a baby, everyone goes through that. That doesn't help. I was a psychology major. I didn't graduate, though, so don't take what I say with a grain of salt. But that's one of the first things we learned, is that does not help. In fact, it exacerbates. So, A, those people who are feeling that way, get help. Talk to your brothers and sisters. And those giving counsel, be patient, be understanding, listen, and keep them accountable. Check in on them. You know, I don't know if anyone's ever done this for you, but I've had some folks ask me, how are you doing? I say, oh, I'm good. And then they will grab my shoulder and they say, no, how are you doing? And then you're like, oh, I've got to have one of those conversations now. But do that. Because people who deal with this, it's not like they're just going to walk up to someone that's never expressed interest in their lives and say, hey, I would rather die right now. It's not like that will happen. You need to be expressing interest. Older folks, elders, people of age, mentor these young people. Mentor me. We need it. That's God's design. And we talked about trusting in the Lord last week. God designed there to be mentors in the church. Paul says to follow such men. And Paul even says to follow me, as imitate me as I also imitate Christ. When we see folks who are exhibiting a profoundly godly life, or they seem very wise, or that they've been a servant of God for a long time, go to those people. And those people who have been living that life, go to us. We need that. I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have some of the mentors that I do have in my life who would walk up to me and actually have real conversations with me, and that made me feel okay to talk to them about anything. Third, have a healthy view of both death and life. We're not going to go there, but Philippians 1, I think, sums up basically what the Christian's attitude towards death and life should be. Remember, Paul, it's a prison epistle, and he's imprisoned, and he had been suffering, and we know he had an incredibly hard life, and Andrew kind of talked about today, like, he might have been literally died before, we don't really know, but he had been tortured, and you think of anyone that may have felt this way, Paul had a right to feel this way, not only because of guilt, because what he did to the early Christians, but because of afflictions, and because we know he had that thorn in his side, whatever that was, and he was suffering. But he says, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. He wasn't overly attached to life. He didn't want to squeeze every year out of life he could get. But he also wasn't having an unhealthy view of romanticizing death and just wanting sleep. He says, I know I have a reward, and I'd love to be with Christ. That's way better than being on earth. And he says, but no, I know while I'm on earth, I'm going to teach Christ to everyone else so that they can have that same hope. So we need to impress that on our minds. If you're dealing with that especially, impress on your minds to live is Christ and to die is gain. So it's okay, because I know some people that have, I don't know how I would be alive if I had their lives. And in their cases, I understand why they feel that death would be better than life, almost objectively. But what I tell them is, you're living, so live for Christ. You're not living for yourself. You're not living for your pain. You're not living for your regrets. You're living for Christ. You're bearing his cross. And finally, remember that life is short. I couldn't find a rope this big. I probably should have asked Gis, but a preacher one time, he did a sermon at East End, and he had a ginormous rope. It was probably from the end of here to the end of this wall. And right here at the very end of the rope was a little piece about that big that had pink tape around it. And he said, I don't know how to illustrate eternity. He said, but this works for me. He said, you see this little tiny pink piece of tape right here? He's like, this is life. All your problems, everything you regret, that's all right there. And he said, and this, the rest of this, and he just keeps winding that rope up and up and up and up and up. And he says, that's eternity. And he said, and it's even bigger than that. So no matter what you're going through, don't do something that would risk all of this for something that's right there. Now, this is an emotional topic. I can't hit everything. I don't know how to. I don't have the tools to. But we could have a lot of different discussions. But before we end, I want to say two things. And that is, you can talk to me. I've talk to a lot of people about this. Like I said, I'm not a professional, but if you just need someone to talk to, you can talk to me. And I'm sure you can talk to Gist and Dutch and hopefully any of us, but I know I'm not going to freak out. I'm not going to say you're selfish. Don't worry about that. And then finally, think about your eternity. And maybe you're not a Christian here, and maybe you felt this way, or maybe you haven't. Maybe you're one of those people talked about in Psalm 73. And David said he realized that their destruction is coming. And he says they are on a slippery slope. No matter how secure you think you are in this life, eternity is going to knock that down if you haven't been living for Christ. And like Andrew talked about, we need to be saved. We need to hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. If you have any need, if you need any help, we ask that you please come forward as we stand and as we sing.